Welcome back to Shattering This. We ended the last hour talking to Paul about the difference between the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and the so-called Christian New Testament. A great example would be these statements here. First from the 119th Psalm. One of the ones that, Paul, you mentioned. It says, "You have actively engaged and accomplished good, beneficial, and generous things through your associate and co-worker, Yahweh, in accordance with your word." That's what Yahweh says, you know, is doing good things in accordance with Yahweh's word. The good and positive aspects associated with exercising good judgment and the whole process of informed, rational decision-making, leading to understanding, based on knowledge, teaches me, so that I might benefit by choosing to respond appropriately. So indeed, in the terms and conditions of your binding covenant contract, I completely trust and totally rely, because they are verifiable and enduring. That's that Hebrew word that we talked about, aman, meaning that which is verifiable, enduring, trustworthy, and reliable. And, you know, it's interesting here that the Christian approach is, it's faith in the gospel of grace. Do you need to know anything to have faith? No. Faith is strictly this, disconnected there for a moment, Paul, but that's the thing that always surprises me, is that Yahweh, throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, is so focused on us being observant, using our eyes to read and our mouths to recite, so our ears can listen to and our brains can contemplate his testimony, just as Dode is saying here. You know, if I study what you have provided and I think about it, then I come to a place where I can understand. And once I understand, I'm in a position where I can respond appropriately to the most important part of your Torah communication, which is the terms of the covenant. Mm-hmm. How does that make its way into faith?
You mentioned that faith, like, as I understand, in the Old Testament,
the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
I understand that there is no really, there is no faith, there's no word faith in the Hebrew, right?
No, there is no word faith.
Faith, yeah. So we basically come to, Yahweh said it, we listen and we do it.
Correct. Yahweh said it. We think about it, we listen to what he had to say, we think about it, we come to understand it, and we respond to it.
Yeah, you know, that's what I understood, yeah.
Yeah, we don't, and Yahweh constantly says that his testimony is enduring, that it never changes, that it's, that therefore it's reliable. And, you know, this notion that he discarded everything that he said to come up with an entirely different plan, having negated the old plan, is just stupid. It's sort of like those Christians that had their Bible study focusing on Colossians and Ephesians, Paul's letters, coming to the conclusion that by citing the Torah, you had to be Jewish. You know, religious Jews didn't and don't quote the Torah. They quote the Talmud. And the Torah is Yahweh's. It's not Jewish. I mean, if you're going to speak against the Torah, you're speaking against God. And so what's the purpose of Christianity if you're going to besmirch the Word of God?
What is that? How about Shuv? What is that word? Because of course, Martin Luther was saved by those verses, "The just shall live by faith." That's faith being put in there. But what Habakkuk actually uses instead of faith?
In Greek, the word that is translated faith is pistos. And pistos was a reasonable translation of the Hebrew aman, which is trust and reliance. But what happened is that over time, pistos went from being trust and reliance to being belief and faith almost exclusively because of Paul's letters. And the reason we know that is that Paul, that's his favorite word, is pistos, this, you know, faith in what he is saying. And he could not have used the word to mean trust and reliance, which was its original connotation in Greek, because he never provided any information that would provide the basis of trust and reliance. You know, to trust, you must know. to rely, you must understand. If you don't know and understand, you are not in a position to trust and rely. Paul never once accurately quoted Yahweh, and he never quoted Yahusha, and he never provided the basis of salvation in accordance with Yahweh's testimony. So Pauline Christians have never been given any information that could be used for trust and reliance. So they're left with faith. And so that's how we know that the pistos in Pauline literature should be translated faith as opposed to trust and reliance, because in the context of his letters, trust and reliance is impossible.
Yeah, so Paul creates that doctrine of faith. So now, another question for you just came to my mind now. From, we go from one question to another, my gosh.
Yes.
Another question. So, the faith is created by Paul, that faith doctrine.
Right.
So now, what are we going to say to Mr. Copeland and Jesse Duplantis and all this faith movement? What do you think about those people?
Yeah, of course, it's all based on fraud. Now, one of the things that's really interesting that is interesting about this. Lies have always been more popular than the truth. That has always been the case in human history. Yahweh affirms that, so we should not be surprised. There is far more to the Pauline creation of faith than just the inappropriate use of pistos. Paul's principle, the fulcrum upon which Pauline doctrine works, is that he claims that you go directly from Abraham to Yahusha, and that Abraham became righteous without the Torah, and therefore Abraham's salvation would have been through faith, and that therefore, since Yahusha is the seed of Abraham, you bypass the Torah, you go directly from Abraham directly to Yahusha, and since Abraham had faith, therefore it's faith that is the operative term. Now, that's his claim. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that Abraham didn't have any faith. He had none. He knew Yahweh. They were buds. They were good friends. They walked together, talked together, ate together, and Yahweh took him to heaven. He took him to the promised land. They had a very deep and affirming relationship together. Second, according to Yahweh, that he gave Abraham his Torah. He says it in the Torah that he gave Abraham his Torah. So the second part of that's not true. And he claims that that the proof that you bypass the Torah and you go directly from Abraham to and his faith, which we've now shown to be false, to Yahusha is that seed, zera, is singular in Hebrew. Well, seed is always singular in Hebrew. It's just like when you, if I say, let's go scatter some seed. If I say, can you buy a box of apple seed? Seed always infers the plural, even though it's written in the singular. And it's the same thing is true in Hebrew. And so the seed of Abraham is Yishak, and Yishak is Yaakov, and Yaakov is the 12 tribes, and the 12 tribes become Yisrael, and that's the covenant. So the whole basis of Pauline Christianity, as it's presented by Paul, is just a farce. And then he takes this faith idea and he says, okay, faith is good, because faith he equates to the Gnostic idea of spirit. And then he equates trust and reliance based upon the Torah to the flesh. So he demeans the Torah, the written word, as flesh and therefore evil. And then he elevates this nebulous concept of faith to be this spiritual thing, and therefore it's good, which plays right into the hands of Gnosticism, and it annuls the basis of trust and understanding, which is the written text of Yahweh. That's Pauline doctrine in a nutshell. And he actually goes as far in Galatians to say that the covenant is of the flesh and it enslaves, because the covenant, as it's formulated in the Torah was with Hagar, the slave woman. Now, I've read the Torah. I can tell you for certain that Yahweh said exactly the opposite. He banished Hagar. And when asked whether or not Hagar's son, Ishmael, could participate in the covenant, Yahweh's answer was, absolutely not. So, you know, Paul just flat out lied. The truth did not suit his agenda. So he blatantly lied. And Christians don't seem to care. They're willing to believe a guy who was a serial liar.
You see, the covenant that he talks about, that covenant with Hagar, as you said, it never happened. But
of course.
I think about those teachers. They are not stupid people. You know, they are educated doctors. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, like present preachers, like famous ones on TV, John Hagee and Copeland.
Right.
And,
yeah. Uh-huh.
They are educated people.
And yeah, but you know, Hagee is one of his most recent books. It was called the Four Blood Moons, and the book was so unbelievably stupid. And it's like a man wrote it that said, all right, I've read some other online Christian blogs, and this blood moon thing is fascinating. I could probably make a buck if I wrote a book about the blood moons and promoted it. And so he has some facts right. Most of his facts are wrong. And he comes to conclusions that are just absolutely insane. And so Hagee be a guy that has some knowledge? Absolutely. Does he have understanding? None. That's wisdom. He did not gain the wisdom that you've gained by reading the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It all bypassed him.
Or they do it on purpose.
They do it on purpose. You know, one of my closest friends when I was a young man in business was Jerry Falwell. And I've told this story on the air before, but it fits your explanation or point here, which is that once I came to know that God's name was Yahweh, once I came to know that the actual name for the person called Jesus in Christianity was Yahusha, once I came to know that the Torah was never annulled, I met with him and I presented all of these facts. I said, everything you're telling your congregation is a lie. You're misleading them. And he said, yeah, you're right. Everything that you've just pointed out is true. And therefore, what I'm saying is not true. He knew it. In the 119th Psalm, which is a song written entirely on behalf of the Torah, in the 71st verse or refrain, we read, your Torah, speaking of Yahweh. It's not the Judaizer's Torah. It's not the Jewish Torah. Your Torah, speaking to Yahweh, is actively engaged in my life because I delight in it. I find it totally enjoyable. It is good and beneficial for me that indeed you responded, providing your testimony for the purpose of teaching me how to properly respond to your engraved and clearly communicated prescriptions of what I should do to be cut into the relationship. The Torah teaching, instruction, direction, and guidance of your mouth is better and more prosperous for me than thousands of gold and silver coins. That's my perspective on the Torah. It was Dode's perspective on the Torah. It's Yahweh's perspective on the Torah. It certainly isn't your Christian friend's perspective on the Torah, is it?
Well, you see, we talk about those teachers, those big names. What about those people? Those people are deceived. So many people are listening to them, sending money, trust.
Absolutely. Trust. It's all about money. Yeah. When I told Jerry Falwell, who was a very nice man, I mean, he was fun to be around, good guy. When I told Jerry Falwell that Christmas and Easter were pagan holidays, there was no Trinity, God hated to be called Lord, Jesus Christ, we're wrong on both accounts. There is no New Testament. The covenant has yet to be renewed. God's name is Yahweh. The Son's name is Yahusha. The Torah still stands. When I told him all of that, he said, you're right. Everything you said is true. He knew it. I said, well, that means that everything that you're doing and you're saying to your congregation is a lie. He says, yep. But he says, if I were to tell the truth, there would be no one sitting in the pews of my church, and those envelopes filled with checks that support my university would stop coming through the mail. And if you say what you have just revealed to me, even though it's true, they will call you a kook.
Right. Well.
Yep. So do they know the truth? Absolutely. I would say that the overwhelming preponderance of Christian pastors know that they're lying to their congregation. They know that God's name is Yahweh and they don't use it. They know that Yosha means Yahweh saves and they don't use it. They know that Paul was a fraud. They know these things.
Mm-hmm.
They know that there's no Christmas and Easter and that associated with God. They know that God never changed his Shabbat to a Sunday. They know that. And they continue to promote the lie. Why? Because Copeland's a rich man. Hagee's a rich man. Got big churches. They have elevated positions within their community. But what did Yahweh say about those who were to assert a leadership position? He said that they would not enter the kingdom of heaven and they shall be the least among men.
And also they're going to call me Lord, Lord, right?
He actually said, you know, don't ever call me Lord. He said you should not accept a title of father, as in what Roman Catholics do. You shouldn't accept the title of rabbi, which he would use the same thing about priest and minister, because that was just a lowy. And you know, he says, you know, they make these long prayers and they have their fancy clothes. And he says, they're just pure hypocrites. You know, while the Sermon on the Mount, as it's recorded in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, is by far the longest, most detailed presentation by Yosha. Second to that would be when you turn to the presentation found in Matthew 23, where he is just assailing the religious community. And there are, in several places, he calls the religious community, and the politicians, both the scribes and the Pharisees. He says, you know, they are the source of yeast that matzah, unyeasted bread, is removing. God hated religion, despises it. Goddamn religion would be, you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and one of the single most repeated themes is Yahweh's hatred for religion.
All right.
You know, what's so amazing, too, is that Christians have their New Testament, and they think that their New Testament was created for the Gentiles, and that they don't want any association with the Jews. And yet the only place where a renewed covenant is mentioned, it's mentioned in association with Yisrael and with Yahudim, not with Gentiles, most certainly not with the church. And so even if there was one, it's not with them. We're having a conversation with Paul about the foolishness of Christianity. And, of course, Christians claim that they have their New Testament. And yet they lug around in their Bibles the Old Testament, and yet they don't seem to recognize that they're absolutely irreconcilably in conflict with one another. And they don't seem to realize that when the covenant is renewed, you know, there's only one difference between the covenant as it is now and the reaffirmation of the covenant. Only one difference. And that is that with the reaffirmation of the covenant, Yahweh actually writes his Torah inside of those who survive his return, the children of the covenant. He writes his Torah inside of us. And so you can't have a New Testament that rejects the Torah, because when the covenant is finally renewed, it's the wholesale incorporation of the Torah. And it's, you have to be a dunderhead to be a Christian.
One of them tried to tell me, well, it's already written, but I said, you know, as Christian, you hate it. In Romans 7, Paul teaches us that we have to die to it.
Right.
It's not relevant anymore.
Yeah. Right. So, in fact, in Romans 7, Paul actually says that he makes up a commandment. There is no commandment that says you should not be sexually perverted. But Paul makes up a commandment that he claims is part of the Torah that he says makes people perverted. That the Torah is the source of perversion. I mean, it's just astonishing that they can't think their way through this. Even, let's just say, for example, let's say that Paul was right. Let's say for a moment that God really screwed up, that the Torah plan was incapable of saving anyone. Let's just say that the Torah was a really bad idea and that God screwed up. He was incapable of coming up with a plan that could save anyone. And that Paul decided that this guy who flunked out of rabbi school, this guy that was out beating up and murdering people, that he is the perfect guy. I'm going to have him come up with a plan that I failed to deliver. And yet he claims to be inspired by the same God whose plan completely failed. Why would anybody in their right mind trust the revised plan? And realistically, if the old plan failed and the new plan is completely different, why would you trust the new plan?
Well, God,
why would you trust a God who's Paul is saying, you know, you were incompetent. Your plan was enslaved. It was mean. It was completely incapable of doing anything worthwhile. But you've now inspired me. You've given me the opportunity to come up with a whole new plan. And my plan, my plan is marvelous. Say what? I mean, it's man claiming to be smarter, to be more capable than God. And they believe it.
Yeah. Nobody asks those questions. Why would God change his mind and, just start to, preach or teach us something totally different?
Right. Why would God come up with a plan that was absolutely failed? Why would he do that? Why would God create man to enslave man, as Paul claims? Why would God come up with a plan that was pornographic, which is what Paul claims? I mean, the whole premise of Pauline Christianity is so stupid. It's so irrational that you have to scratch your head and say, how is it possible? One of the things that I did in trying to create the last day's volume of Yada Yada, I spent two very long chapters. It's actually broken down to four chapters. But on Daniel's prophecies regarding Greece and Rome, calling Greece and Rome the beast. And what I tried to figure out is, how is it possible that a religion that is completely disassociated with its core. It's like you not only uprooted Christianity, but you ripped off the roots. And how is it possible to fool so many people about a religion that was completely incongruous with its own roots? And so I studied Rome and Greece and the attitudes of Romans and Greeks to try to figure out how in the world Paul managed to fool people. Because during his own lifetime, he didn't. During his lifetime, everybody rejected him. But several hundred years after Paul died, his letters were used to perpetrate the greatest lie in all of human history. And so that's why I studied the Gnostic perspective of the Greeks, which is the basis of Pauline doctrine, and the Roman embrace, particularly of Hadrian, of Dionysus, and the Roman hatred of Yahudah, of Yisrael, of Hebrew, and the God of the Hebrews. It's once you understand that culture that was thriving at the time that Pauline Christianity became the official religion, then you can see how a completely uprooted faith took hold. And one of the things you learn is that Roman historians and Roman theologians in the 3rd and 4th century were all revisionists. And in fact, their reviews, their historical accounts were so far-fetched as to be wholly and completely laughable. And these are the same people that maintain the so-called Christian New Testament. And it's why now there are more discrepancies between the manuscripts that form the basis of English translations than there are words in the oldest variations. 300,000 known variations in a text that's about 180,000 words long. It's just, you know, the whole thing is, if it wasn't so sad, if it wasn't for the fact that 3 billion people are negatively influenced by Pauline Christianity, it would be funny. It's that laughable.
I mean, throughout the ages, how many people trusted that doctrine? You know what I mean?
Yeah, my guess is that you're right in the range of between 7 and 10 billion people.
My God.
Yeah. Maybe 6 billion to 8 billion, something in that range. My conclusion is that Paul is the most influential man who ever lived. You can't even remotely claim Yahusha was, because there's not even one in a million people that pay attention to what he said and did.
Well, like you said in Habakkuk 2, right? You mentioned that one man,
mm-hmm.
right? One man that everybody would know him.
Right.
Influenced. He gathers all nations. He gathers right. them to himself. So
correct.
It must be like you said. It must be about him gathering
right.
all nations.
Oh yeah. When it comes to the Habakkuk prophecy,
right?
There's only one. Yeah. There's only one person that fits the Habakkuk prophecy. In fact, there's only one person that fits Yahusha's warning in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, you know, I have come in my Father's name, Yahusha, and you did not accept me. But someone will come in his own chosen name, and him you will accept. Paul is the only person we know that changed his name that is universally accepted by Christians who have completely rejected the one who came in Yahweh's name, Yahusha. You know, it's the saddest statement, I think, in the whole of the eyewitness accounts is Yahusha's statement in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, you know, I came in my Father's name and he rejected me. And yet one will come in his own name, and him you will accept. Mm-hmm. So unbelievably sad.
Yeah. And another thing is how little we have of what really Yahusha said, right? It's very little.
Yes, and we have none of it in Hebrew, right. Other than the passages that he cited from the Torah prophets and Psalms. We can go back and study them in Hebrew. But what's really interesting is by far the most detailed and the only accurate eyewitness accounts of what occurred in year 4000 Yon, 33 CE, with the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah, is written in the 88th Psalm, the 22nd Psalm, and late Yashayah, around the 53rd chapter. All of that written 700 to 1,000 years in advance of the fulfillment, and they are the most accurate, most detailed eyewitness accounts. So you could completely dispose of the so-called Christian New Testament and have a more accurate view of who Yahusha is and what he said and did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I mean, one of the great lines, and Christians never want to think about this, where Yahusha is saying, my God, why have you forsaken me, which means to separate from me. And then he says that he gave up his spirit, which means that the individual on that upright pole was no longer God. That's what it means. That means that the Spirit of God that made him Yahweh is gone. And so how can the God, you know, because God can't die. And if he's supposed to be the fullness of God, then he can't give up God. But yet he did. And Christians are completely clueless as to why that would be the case. They're also clueless as to why on the most important day on their calendar, their Easter Sunday, why no one recognized him. You know, if the bodily resurrection was such a big deal, then the big deal would be everybody would recognize him, and yet no one recognized him. It's just every aspect of the religion is just based on obvious lies. And You know, all you have to do is read the Sermon on the Mount, and you'll understand exactly who Yahusha is, what he did, why he did it. Literally emerging out of the pages of the Torah to honor Yahweh's promises, and he even claims to be the diminished manifestation of Yahweh and constantly tells people, you know, look through me, come to know Yahweh. You know, it's not my call, it's Yahweh's call.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that, that you know, when Yahusha said about Holy Spirit, Ruach Kodesh, right?
Right, the set apart spirit.
Yahshua is going back to the Father, and he
right.
will send another spirit of truth.
Right, right.
To comfort her, right?
Right.
And he will remind you of what? I ask the question of what? Of course, about not about the you know gospel of grace, but
right.
about the Torah.
What about the Torah.
Teaching, what he was living, right?
Correct.
So
you know, I was just this yesterday, as I was doing my workouts, I decided that I would read the hearsay account of Mark. Now, Mark is doing his best to remember what Shimon Kefesh, who's known as Peter, had to say. And he's writing down what he overheard Shimon say from his experience with Yahusha. And it seems like every other word about Yahusha is teach, teach, teach. He taught the Torah. He taught the prophets. He taught the Psalms. He taught. As the Christians were thinking, and they read the testimony attributed to Yahusha, and they find that every time that he meets with a new community of people, the first thing he did was begin teaching. Now, there's a Hebrew word, actually four or five Hebrew words for teach, but the most famous of all Hebrew words means to teach, Torah. So as he was teaching, he was Torah-ing. He was sharing the Torah. That's what he would have been teaching. And yet, when you compare that to Pauline Christianity, which is about faith, as opposed to understanding, trust, or reliance, why even bother? Why did Yahusha even bother teaching if the means to salvation were simply believing?
Yeah.
Why teach? No, every aspect of Christianity falls apart when you consider who Yahusha is and what he did. When you actually know what his name is, when you pay attention to what he had to say, you know, every aspect of it falls apart. There's really nothing left that a religion can be based upon.
I also noticed. You remember that verse from Ephesians, I think 4:11. I think it's talking about the apostles, prophets, that the Lord Jesus, you know, called the apostles, right?
Yes.
Prophets, the teachers.
Paul's body life, where he has all of these different categories of individuals, and of course, Yahusha never spoke Greek, so he never actually even used the word apostle, never used the word disciple.
Right. And what happens is this, it says to bring us together, you know what I mean? To,
right.
to be in one faith. And
right.
what you observe is actually the opposite happened. We have so much division because of these words that Paul wrote.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
the most denominations, I think, are fighting about his words. Everybody interprets, you know, in
yeah.
their own way.
Yeah, in fact, I was just thinking about this in the reading of Mark yesterday, is that you have Yahusha picking each of his 12 disciples. He's going around and choosing those that he wants to spend the next 3 to 3.5 years with. And it's constantly saying that I'm going to speak in parables to the masses. I'm going to, if you don't understand what I'm saying, I'm going to explain it to you privately. But and he constantly is telling his disciples, I'm going to spend quality time with you, teaching you so that you understand. Now, at the time, Paul was in Jerusalem. He'd have been easy to find. If Yahweh wanted to teach him, if he wanted to use him, you tell me why Paul was not part of that group. Why God would say, you know, I took the time to teach these 12 guys who I am and what I'm all about and what I've done, what I represent. And then, you know, I'm going to have a different guy that wasn't one of those that I picked, that I never walked a day with me. And he's going to negate everything that those disciples have to say and that I taught them. It's preposterous. And no matter how you look at it, and Christians know that that Paul had arguments with Jacob and Shimon and Yohanan. It's all over Paul's letters. It's all over Revelation that they had disagreements, and that the disagreements were profound. And they don't bother to think, wait a minute, how is that even possible? And why would you believe the one guy that wasn't chosen as a disciple over the fellows that were chosen as a disciple? You know, I ask you, how is it possible that Paul could have spoken for Yahusha if he never once quotes him? 13 letters. There's only one snippet of a citation from Yahusha, and that one he gets wrong. Never once. Never once references Matanyahu or Yohanan. You know, Paul can't be speaking of those letters because he never references them and never quotes Yahusha accurately. Ever. You know, his line was...
Romans 12, I think he quotes part of it, to pray for your enemies, I think, right?
Yes. Romans 13 is an amazing book. Here's Yahweh and Daniel telling us that the most vicious, the most awful beast, the most satanic and deadly nation in all of human history is Rome. And in Romans 13, his letter to the Romans, Paul is telling the Christians to submit to the Roman government. That he's saying that the Roman government was established by God, when God is saying it's satanic. We'll be with you tomorrow.